Hello everyone, and welcome to The Rut, the podcast which delves into the minds of men from all walks of life to try and find answers to some of the burning questions in and around men's mental health. We're not just a podcast, we're also a YouTube channel now, so head over to YouTube, type in The Rut Podcast, and remember to subscribe to the channel so we can bring you all of our interviews, episodes, and content to your eyes and not just your ears. Right, some very exciting podcast news actually now, because we're absolutely delighted to welcome Cornerstone as a partner and sponsor. Cornerstone is your monthly men's health subscription box, providing you with everything you need to look, smell, and feel good every month. Handmade razors with titanium personalized handles, the most wonderfully smelling shaving cream and moisturizer I've certainly ever had the privilege of trying. And if you're feeling a bit frisky over Christmas, or over this Christmas period, and you want to give your other half the time of their lives, they've even got Cornerstone Viagra, so you don't miss out on any of the action over the festive period. So as a Rut Podcast listener or viewer, see what I did there, now we're on YouTube, eh? You can get £10 off your first box by going to www.cornerstone.co.uk/rut, or I will put the link in the show notes below and you can find the link on our Instagram and Twitter pages. As I said, Cornerstone are giving you £10 off your first box, which is basically free, and Merry Christmas. Trust me, this will be a fantastic last-minute present for any of the men in your life. I've literally got one for my brother and dad. I may have just revealed some of my family's presence on the podcast. Anyway, doesn't matter. Hopefully they're not listening to this episode. Actually, hopefully they are. Now on to this week's episode. And we have one hell of an episode for you. In 2008, this man was flying pretty high. He had a well-paid career, he was playing semi-professional rugby, and he'd just met the love of his life. He was 24. And then, on Maybank holiday in 2008, his life changed forever. He woke up after a night out with his mates and he could barely speak. Overnight, he developed a rare neurological disorder called dystonia, which affects your speech and your arms. Dystonia doesn't have a cure, and ever since then, he's been raising awareness for his disability. His disability has progressed to the point where he's lost parts of the use of his hands, where they've curled inwards, and his speech is, 12 years later, incredibly slurred. He's the most remarkable human being, though, and he's forged a new career as a disability coach with the Matt Hampson Foundation and at Matt Hampson's Get Busy Living Centre, just in the outskirts of Leicestershire. This year, he was named in the top 100 most influential disabled people of 2020. This episode is a tough listen, so I will warn you now, you will need to concentrate, and I'm not going to make any apologies for James or his condition, because on this podcast, we take people how they are, and I am so, so proud of this episode, and so proud that we're able to highlight James's condition. But I will just disclaim, it is a tough listen, but like I said, we think it's incredibly important to highlight his condition as much as possible and understand how disabled people or people with a disability also suffer with their mental health. Another option you actually do have as well is if you go on our YouTube channel, you can find the entire episode, video episode with subtitles on there, and it's a cracking watch in which James almost spits out his energy drink halfway through when we're talking about rugby nausing. Anyway, go on YouTube if you prefer, and you can see the interview there. So, here's James Sutliff's story. Please leave all judgment at the door. Mr. James Sutliff, welcome to The Rut. I'm so excited about this one. I cannot thank you enough for joining me.
Well, thank you.
How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good, mate. Yeah, I'm very good.
Yeah? How's lockdown treated you? But I imagine it's been quite frustrating, given that you've not been able to do as much hands-on work with the clients. You do amazing work with them. We'll go into that later. But how's it been like for you?
I've actually found the second lockdown a lot harder.
Yeah.
A lot more frustrating because, how they've gone about it with certain gyms, and I had to do my hands-on coaching. It's I absolutely love and I miss doing that. So I found the second lockdown a lot harder.
And do you know what? I have as well. I really enjoyed the first one. I think probably the weather was brilliant. And it was all very novel. The amount of time I got to spend with Abby, my partner, was amazing. And do you know what? We really slowed down. We were taking walks in Richmond Park every day, and now it's just a bit shit. We're speaking at a timely time at the moment, James, because I am fortunate enough to follow your Instagram page. And it is one of the most remarkable places of human, I suppose, endeavor, spirit, and inspiration that you could genuinely ask for when times are tough. And I think your Instagram page and your story puts things massively into perspective. How do you cope with the reaction to it? Because you've got, almost 50,000 followers now. Yeah. And you're one of the leading lights in disability with regards to your condition, which is dystonia. And we'll come on to dystonia in a second, but what's Instagram been like for you?
At the start, it was a hard thing to get started because when I first started the Instagram, I was in bad news, so really nobody got me in what I was trying to do, and over the years I've kept at the Instagram. It's grown and grown and grown, and it has been an amazing platform for me to show what I do, my disability, and the coaching I do with the disabled community.
How many messages do you get a week saying you're a leading inspiration? Because I bet it's overwhelming, I imagine.
Yeah, I get a few. And with them kind of messages, I do reply to everyone.
It's amazing. Amazing. Right. You have one of the most extraordinary stories I've probably read about since I've been starting this podcast, which I launched it in May, and we've done quite well since then with hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of people now listening week in, week out. Tell me, what happened, because before that May bank holiday, which you're going to explain in your own words, in 2008, you were a plumbing engineer.
Yeah.
You were a semi-professional rugby player.
Yeah.
And you were earning good money. You had a career set up.
Yeah.
You were 24 years old, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me a bit about what life was like as James Sutcliffe before that May bank holiday in 2008.
Life is good. Life is perfect. It's good, fantastic. I have no issues. I'm healthy. I'm young. I had a good career. Business. Playing a good standard of rugby. Everything was going perfect.
Absolutely. Everything was going perfect. It's amazing.
Yeah. I had only one parent, but that wasn't an issue. Everything is going to perfect. And at that time of my life, there's no issues at all. Not at all.
You met your wonderful wife, who I've seen on YouTube a few times now, having researched your story, Samantha. You met her 6 months before that May bank holiday.
Yes.
How did you meet her?
So I met her through friends. So she knew me. We became good friends. And then... It turned into
love. Love at first sight or not? Good answer. I mean, she will 100% hopefully listen to this.
She scares me.
Yeah. Okay. Then we get to the most remarkable part of your, I think, well, one of them actually, remarkable parts, the other remarkable parts, what happened after this, but May bank holiday, 2008,
yeah.
What happened?
So, the trip have really stressed seats, but a lot worse than this. The seats have been through so much since then.
Really?
Yeah, a lot.
Wow.
My speech then was horrendous, and I found it hard to eat.
Wow. You say you woke up. You'd been out for a big night out, right?
No, not really. Only a few drinks. Nothing too heavy. Just a standard night.
Wow. So you woke up, slurred speech. I can't believe it was worse than that. It's extraordinary. And you had absolutely no idea what was going on.
No idea. And me being me as a man, left for a few days thinking it will go back to normal. Nothing changed. So I went to the hospital after 3 days. I had passed them.
What was running through your mind that morning? Because to be honest, if your speech was that slurred, the natural reaction is probably that you might have had a stroke, right?
Yes.
Were you must have been worried, right?
At first, I wasn't thinking it would actually go back to normal.
Really?
But I had,
But clearly it didn't. Yeah, we're 12 years on. Genius. So what tests did they do at the hospital?
CAT scans, everything.
And they had absolutely no idea what this was.
Everything came back as clear.
Really?
Yeah.
That's extraordinary. And what was the aftermath? I mean, it was... So 3 days in, you've gone to the hospital. You've had CAT scans, MRIs, X-rays. Yeah. They've all come back clear. They're all normal. Yeah. The speech doesn't go back to normal, though.
No.
Like, what was the impact on you early on? Because you say in your own words, it began to worsen as well.
Yeah, after a year, it started to affect my hands. So on my left hand, my thumb is inwards.
Yeah. Wow, and could you feel that going?
I felt it getting worse over time,
Is that permanent?
Yeah, it is now. I can move it a little bit, but
wow, look at that, it's extraordinary.
Yeah, and then that hand is like that,
and it's difficult to know the words, really. I'm normally quite good with words. This started, and I want to know what was going on in your mind, because obviously this podcast is about men's mental health, right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
To be honest with you, the reason why we're recording is because your journey after that day in May in 2008 has been one of the most amazing to watch for the people who've been able to watch it. But for you, you've gone through loads of shit with this.
Yeah.
And mentally, it's been really, really difficult.
Yeah, it has.
So the preceding days, give me a bit of insight into like what you were thinking in those days after, and when you began to realize this was kind of going not going the way you thought it would be going.
I was every time it would get better. But then over time, I knew I couldn't do the work I was trained in. That mentally got me, because no matter what, I have to leave my career
as a plumber.
Yeah, and business. I found that hard. And up there, and then we have to go back. I found that hard and challenging, knowing that I might lose everything. I found that hard. Not, I didn't find my disability hard. I found losing everything harder.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
That scared me thinking, what next?
Why? Because from the outside world, like myself, other people will be listening to this and hopefully watching this and be like, the change overnight from somebody who was semi-professional rugby player, who is one of the lads, can talk normally, to then basically almost losing your speech and your ability to use your hands properly. That in itself is something which would knock many a man back.
Yeah. It's that I adapted to it.
You adapted to it.
Yeah, I had to.
Yeah.
I witnessed my mum dying of cancer, and that made me mentally stronger to accept my own issues.
Yeah.
I know that sounds ridiculous, but seeing that my own mother gave to cancer like that, I found it in my head after that I feel about raising me. I've only lost the feet and the hands, it is what it is. I don't think that's me.
That's amazing. It puts everything into perspective, really. Do you mind if we go into your mum? What was she like as a person? I mean, she...
Hard lady.
What cancer did she fight?
The cancer.
And what effect did that have on you?
In the end, it was a weapon. She's in that much pain and she's dying. In the end, it was a weapon. So, and that's murder, and you see it firsthand, then you understand how it made me stronger. She was a hard lady. So hard. I'm not her in everything.
Wow, she sounds brilliant. I mean, but she's clearly you talk about her saying she's a hard lady, right? But she's instilled in you this resilience.
Yeah, definitely.
From it looks like, because for anybody who's just lost their speech and or not lost it fully, but it's dramatically impaired. And also the use of parts of his hands, that would be incredibly difficult. And this has gone on for 9 years, right? It's obviously got a lot easier as you've gone on, but your condition hasn't ever been treated per se. There's no treatment plan, is there?
So basically, I is under the neurologist in Leicester.
The neurologist in Leicester.
Yeah, useless. They let me down so much. So,
why?
It's in the head. It's facing it. It's in the head. I'm not gonna take that. That you can change. I got transferred to London. I've under the neurologist in London. I finally got diagnosed after 5 years.
That's amazing.
And I knew it wasn't in my head. So,
explain to everybody what dystonia is.
neurographical movement disorder. There's no cure that they have. They have Botox injections. That's the only treatment there is.
And what does the Botox do?
It hurts me. It hurts the lats and muscles. So I had it in the chin.
Yeah.
Neck, hands, and forearms.
So sorry, it helps to relax the muscles.
Yeah.
So in essence, are your muscles constantly clenched?
But I've not had no Botox in a year and a half. And now I'm having treatment on my TMJ. I have treatment in LA now, in America.
Yeah, what is that? So it's like almost like a bridge.
Yeah.
For people who are listening to this, there's like a, it looks like a gum shield.
Yeah.
Bridge.
It hurts to realign my jaw. I had a cat scans in LA. Not on the head, I have it here.
On the jaw?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that showed on the left side, my issues are in here.
So that CAT scan showed that on the left side of your jaw,
yeah,
it's changed?
Yeah. The my TMJ joint is damaged in here.
But is that, and what's that caused from? Dystonia.
They think that I was born with a defect in my jaw, and then over the years I've came with me and getting hit. It's caused my dystonia.
But that's not... So, okay, so let's just roll this back a second. So what you're claiming there... Well, not claiming, but what you're describing there is that you were born with a defect, right, in your jaw, and then through the process of playing rugby and repeated hits, you have... Dystonia has, I suppose, been born. It's a neurological disorder in the brain.
The TMJ is treated here to not end the NHS. They think it's linked. But in America, they think it's linked.
To concussions.
Yeah, it hit in the jaw.
In the jaw, really? Yeah. Wow. But that doesn't explain the hands.
Yeah, it's linked. So every nerve linked.
It's the nervous system. Right, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's extraordinary.
I only learned this last year.
What was that experience like of learning more about your disability? Because it is, there's very little out there about this.
Yeah. For her, and have some answers, some solid answers, that just relief to me. Mentally, to hear that, it was such a relief to hear.
Really? Why?
It hurts. it's a mirror closure.
Closure.
Yeah.
Wow. Can you talk to me about how, because there's going to be people listening to this who really can't quite wrap their head around how you've dealt with the change in your life. And I know your attitude is that it's just get on with it, which is the best attitude to have because you're living that life. And it gives hope to dystonia fighters out there too. But for the people who are thinking, well, what has the change been like? Can you describe to me what it's been like being inside James Sutliff since that day in May 2008, and just paint a picture of like where your mental health has taken you through fighting this, and why do you think?
So, at the start, I found it so hard mentally because I had no answers, I had no direction, I had just. I felt rough. The other time, I knew I had to keep mentally strong to get to where I am now. So I've kept going and going, and the first 5 years, it was so mentally draining for me. Then I had the diagnosis that it changed, and how I am now and how I was then, my whole mindset, my own mentality has changed so much, so much.
And in what sense? How?
I'm so mentally stronger and mentally happier. And for me, I have to, like I said before, look at every people, and I know that are people a lot worse than me, that in my eyes, I am blessed. And that,
no, blessed. I love that. I love that. You are blessed. What made you think you're blessed?
That I don't have a disorder that will kill me. I'm not really bad. I'm very lucky. It's not going to kill me. That's why I look back at my mother, to her hamper, to have it laid to her bed. I think I'm not really bad. I'm not. So I'm very lucky and very blessed. And I have.
Fascinating. The psychology of disability is quite interesting, don't you think?
Yeah.
Because the most people you speak to, and I suppose this might be ignorance on the part of people who don't have a disability, but we perceive it, me included, have perceived it to be like extraordinary and amazing, yet for you this is normal life.
Yeah.
Like how do you deal with that?
How do I deal with diseases?
Yeah, exactly. So day-to-day life, whereby people, I mean, you're talking to people and they might be like, what has happened there?
I know I have a disability, I know I'm unique, but I have to just get on the bus. I can't let him turn me. If I let my disability turn me, it will kill me. I have to take control of my own disability.
Wow. With disabilities, like where do you see the entire disability world moving to? Because there's been a lot of breakthroughs in various different treatments for disability, but the stigma attached to disability, I mean, you are right at the forefront of the, I suppose, the disability world, right? Like, you're one of the leading people who's campaigning for various stigmas to be broken down and saying, look, I am a normal guy at the end of the day. I just have to have an inability to talk like properly. But that's something that you need to deal with and not me. Where do you see mental health within the disability world moving to? Because do you think it's a real problem?
I do think it is a real problem. I have witnessed it firsthand. I've seen mental health in some of my clients. I've worked with their partners. Have disabilities and have tried to suicide for every thing I'm missing.
And like you said, you mentioned there that you've seen it firsthand within a lot of your clients. Like what do some of your clients go through? And I want to get for context, actually, let's just dive into the Matt Hampson Foundation and you as a disability coach, because then maybe we can come onto the mental health with clients in a sec. So, different question. How did you get into, you've always been in the gym, right? Obviously playing semi-professional rugby dictates that you have to be a certain size. But what made you move into disability coaching?
The whole fitness helped me to overcome my own disability mentally and physically. I thought, why not do it as a career? Who helped me? I never learned to help other people like me,
you absolutely love it, right? What do you love about it?
The interaction, the talking, and changing their life. Then the change in them mentally and physically, it is just
see yourself, you're just lighting up as you talk about it. It's lovely, it's extraordinary, but also it's a bit of an underreported world, right? Like you kind of assume that because people are disabled, that they can't exercise, or they might not want to do it. But you're seeing something different there.
A lot of them seem to me, a lot of my private disabled clients seem to me because they've had bad experiences from other coaches,
Really?
Then I heard the mission service say me is that I have can't see me then can't start because they've been let down.
In what way?
It is that every coach's saying I heard the mission to help you as a coach. So,
wow.
A lot of coaches are too scared to take on the responsibility in coaching disabled clients. To me, I don't care.
Yeah, because it's also who you are now. Like it's doesn't matter, does it to you? And the Matt Hampson Foundation, I obviously know it because I'm a massive rugby Nors, and I all know for people watching, James is about to spit out his energy drink. But how did you get in contact with the Matt Hampson Foundation? You obviously live close, but they've built the Get Busy Living Centre, which is the most extraordinary place. And that's where you kind of work, right? Now, full time.
I work there and I have my own
private clients. Yeah. What's the Hambo Foundation been like for you? I mean, I can imagine it's extraordinary.
I owe them so much. Hambo, I've known Hambo a long time. I knew Hambo before his injury. So
that, oh, really?
Yeah.
That, wow. How long's that? That's over 10 years now.
A long time, yeah. So I owe them so much. They've given me a platform to go and to say what I can do, and it is an amazing place. It is amazing.
We touched on earlier how a number of your clients, obviously you've seen it firsthand yourself, but a number of your clients struggle mentally. Mm-hmm. Like, without naming names, but we associate mental health at the moment with like depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, distinct negativity, but also it's such a problem nowadays, and in my opinion, and I'm sure you probably agree, it is the mental health pandemic that we're currently facing is going to be bigger than COVID-19, in my opinion. Firsthand, what have you seen, James, and how does it affect your clients? So how does, I suppose, disability affect the mental health of your clients?
The younger ones who are born with a disability, they've suffered the most.
They've suffered the most.
Yeah, because when they're born with a disability, they have to go to school. And being a kid at a school having a disability is not the best time of our year. The belief, the learning.
How does that affect you?
Sometimes when I'm doing at work and we hear the issues at the end of the day, I sit down and I am mentally drained. It mentally drains me. I have to take on so much of Evan's issues at home and so tired. It drains me.
But on the flip side of that, you've also, because you are such an extraordinary person, doing the most amazing thing possible, you're also this kind of beacon of hope for a huge amount of people, right? Yeah. Like, when we look at your Instagram and it's there to see, like, the comments of support. It's extraordinary. I look at it every day and I'm like, wow. But also, like, the clients you train, they have a trust in you, which they don't really trust many other people, probably, bar really, really close family and maybe friends. So having fostering that type of environment, like, how do you do it as a disability coach? Say you've got somebody who's struggling mentally, like, how do you go about fostering an environment that they can come and train in, whereby they feel open to talking to you about their deepest troubles?
So, listen, I always give them the option that every session I put them, I tell them, how are you doing mentally? And then they tell me everything.
So, really?
I'd rather them tell me if I know, I'd rather them let them touch me. I'd rather have that connection with them. It makes them so safe talking to me. If I get it, I understand it, and then let it act to me, then better than it act in their own head. It's better to talk about it than leave it in there.
I suddenly had a bit of an epiphany there, because you said, okay, well, the first thing I do is how are you doing mentally, and it all pours out. But like, we don't do that if we don't have a disability. It's very rare you find somebody going, how are you doing mentally? But adding one simple word onto how are you doing? Why do you think how are you doing mentally works so well?
Because that's getting in deeper. You want to know everything. Then ask me how am I mentally. For me, that means if I have any issues, I need to look at that now. So that one word, it lets them know that they can let everything out in the open.
And what do you tend to hear? Like, are we talking like, okay, yeah, I'm really suffering. I might be suffering with depression. Like, is it a depression, anxiety related? I assume it's probably like image as well. It's just a tough world, isn't it?
It's mainly like the thing related. I do have them who suffer with anxiety.
You do?
Yeah.
Do you suffer with anxiety?
No, I don't, but if I have an anxiety attack, I know how to handle it.
Well, how do you handle it?
Keep talking, let him do it, let the process go. I've seen that happen a few times now. So I see it happening. So,
really?
They go silent, head down, and then talk. So I just know. So,
did you... I want you to, for a moment, like reflect back on your journey, right?
Yeah.
You call this a blessing, which I can clearly see why it's a blessing, because look, let's be honest, you had a good career before, or the makings of a good career before the disability happened, or that night in May Bank Holiday. You were a good plumber earning good money, yet now you're earning a little bit less money. You don't have the materialism that you might have had as a plumber, but this purpose and this why that you have is so strong. It like radiates, it beams out of you all the time. It's like, I'm just this big, inclusive, good looking bloke who is saying, come under my wing and I'm going to take you very far in the disability world. Like when you reflect back on it, like how does it make you feel? Because in some cases, I imagine you're probably sat there thinking, saying, well, do you know what? I'm really glad it happened.
And then in a weird way, I am so glad that it did. It made me into this good person I am now. I don't hate it. It actually made me. It made me into who I am now. I give hope to everyone because I'm so open about my own disability. My disclaimer has actually it's made me into who I am. I don't hate it. I don't resent it. It is me. It's me.
That's fantastic. Who do you think you'd be without it?
I don't know. I don't like to think about that. I think of how I am now, that I pretend, and the work I do. I'm not a if person, I'm a now person.
I'm hoping there's going to be, this is your second ever podcast episode with anybody. So I'm extremely humbled that you've chosen The Rut to appear on, bar me begging you week in, week out, because I think you're so brilliant. But it's your second podcast episode. There's going to be people listening to this who might have disabled children, who might know somebody who is disabled, but also who might want to sit here and kind of listen to how you deal week in, week out mentally with the disability. It sounds like it's not really a problem. But what advice do you give to... Okay, there's two questions here, actually. Which is interesting. What advice would you give to James Sutcliffe 9 years ago? Sorry, it was 2008, 12 years ago, when you started out on this journey? We'll start with that question first.
That's hard.
I'm paid to ask the hard questions, James. Have you ever been asked that question?
Then it's hard. It's kind of hard to give an answer because...
What advice would you give to James Sutcliffe 12 years ago when he was starting out on this journey?
It's hard.
Take your time and think. Honestly, take your time. I want to know the answers. Let me talk for a bit. Like, I want to know the answer to this, or at least get your opinion on this, because I think there's two different questions that could be asked here. What advice would you give to the James Sutcliffe 12 years ago starting out this journey? And then what advice would James Sutcliffe now give to people out there about how you can live a normal life? So, which is why I wanted to start with the one about you, because your own personal journey with your mental health, with the way your disability is perceived, not knowing for fucking ages about what on earth this was.
So, if I was giving myself advice, I said, don't lose hope. Keep going and keep in fact, share your story as much as you can. Keep inspiring. Don't let your disability control and ruin your life mentally. How about
that? That's really good. That's really good.
Yeah.
Is it with the second question, therefore, which I'd ask, which is, what advice do you give to parents of disabled children out there? Like, I'm sure you get asked this quite a lot, but is it relatively similar?
It is. If I haven't been any advice to a parent, with a disability, just don't give it hope, keep pushing, if you have any goals, any dreams, just go for them. Don't let your disability hold you back. Don't let anyone tell you that we cannot do anything because of your disability. It is down to you as a person who's unique to go follow your dreams, your goals. Keep the hopes, stay strong, stay determined, and don't let your disability determine you. You're the person who's in control of your life, your journey, your disability.
What an amazing answer. What an amazing answer. Does it take it out of you when you're talking?
Yeah.
Is it tiring?
Yeah, it's hard. It is what it is.
We could probably go on for hours, but I imagine your jaw might fall off. And
I like it.
Okay, what was I going to ask then? Oh yes, like, what's your been your biggest challenges in this 12-year process?
Coming to terms with my dystonia.
Coming to terms with your dystonia.
And knowing that I might never get cured.
Mm.
That's a hard bit, but I'm over now.
Okay. Well, stop. What? Stop. Stop there. How did you get over that?
I came to terms with it. I had to. If I didn't come to terms with this, it would actually. It beat me. I can't let it beat me. I can't. So I have to run to hundreds of times, accept it and distance. And
was there a process you went through to accept it or not? As in, well, I'm kind of interested in the psychology of it there, because people who are like, well, I just don't know how we can accept it.
It took a long time. It took really.
Just time.
Yeah. Seeing that certain thing, it took a long, long time. It didn't have that. It took years to accept it.
What were the low points like?
I never ever got too low. I have the best wife and the best mates who made sure that I never ever get that low. So yeah, I have to keep going. How learn to accept it that I always kept busy by writing and I kept an always on the go.
Okay.
If I sit down and stopped, I overthink it. I have to keep active and busy.
For you, it sounds like you've got quite a few clients who come to you who are struggling with their mental health, right?
Yeah.
On a regular basis. What do you tell them to do? Like, what would you say to somebody to improve things? And actually, this is one of my questions later in the quick fire question round that I've got for you, which I go through with everybody. So I hope you're ready for that. I purposely didn't tell you the questions in advance, but yeah, like somebody who's struggling, like, do you have any tricks for somebody? Is it just a matter of talking? Because obviously, this podcast is all about getting men to talk, right?
I'm talking. It's the most important thing. It's talking.
Talk.
All of my clients, if I ever know, you can text me or ring me any time of the night. So I give them that option. That they can contact me any time.
Wow.
What I've learned is they know they have that option, it makes them feel better.
What do you think needs to change, though, in the mental health conversation within within disability, within the disabled world? Like, what needs to change? Because, to be honest, I've got to apologize for my ignorance here. Like, I don't know too much about it, and that's my fault. But that's because I haven't been too exposed to it yet. I'm very, very interested in how the mental health landscape looks like in the disability world and within disabled people, and what you think needs to change. Because from the outside world, I'd probably argue there's a huge amount needs to change, and it's not really spoken about that much.
I never got asked to have, I never had the option to have any counseling. So I think there needs to be counseling offers to the disabled guys a lot more. So I really hear much about it. It's us then, mainly that I've had in the last 6 months, and we've had an injury, get discharged from hospital, that's it, boom.
Really?
I think there needs to be more of a mental health five offers to any disabled people.
You don't, so you were never offered counselling?
Me? Yeah. I was never offered it. No.
Wow. What, why do you think that was?
Just
didn't cross the GP or the neurologist's mind at the time.
It's
extraordinary. Mentally, if you were to sum up your mentality, what would it be?
What
does that look like when you say I'm mentally strong? Like, what do you mean?
I mean, I haven't set anything thrown at me. I'm having a bad day. I know how to overcome it. If anyone needs to talk to me, I'm hungry. I'm not perfect. I know I have a rare day, but I feel like if I get ill with, say, Hamster, I can take it. If I get ill with something new, take it.
It's extraordinary.
I'm this person. Say it how it is. I don't have a back. I don't lie. I am straight excellent. I say it how it is. I am so honest. I'm honest. I can't lie.
Does that makes you?
Yeah. That's me, yeah.
How do you think your wife would describe you?
Strong-minded, determined. I had a heart of gold.
Yeah.
She says, like me, it's good. She says to me that I'm her inversion.
How does that feel?
Amazing.
Yeah.
She inspired me in business, to have her own businesses. We are a good team.
Wow. That's amazing. I've got 5 questions for you to finish up. Because do you know what? We've done an hour now. It's brilliant.
It's great.
Number one, what's your favorite book and why?
Oh.
Go get it. Right. For anybody listening, James has gone to get it. Oh, he's back.
It is the Mindset Manifesto.
The Mindset Manifesto. What's it about?
Mindset, positivity, that does
change your life.
I had this conversation with my wife today, and then he mentioned that book. Get it.
Okay, I'm gonna read it. I'll read it, and I'll let you know my thought. So it's all about. So why is it your favorite book?
I read that book. That book actually made me set up the disability coaching.
Really?
It made me. I had the hesitations that I had no confidence.
Yeah.
Doing it. I read that book, and it turns.
Okay, I'm gonna give it a read.
Let me. The Motivation Manifesto.
The Motivation Manifesto.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Declaration to claim your personal power. Who's it written by?
It's by Brendan
Bouchard.
Yeah.
I love Brendan Bouchard. Okay. Do you know what? I think my mum might have that. She's big. She does his courses as well.
He is. Yeah.
I've got his. Have you got his high performance planner?
I've not. I did.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really good. Yeah. It's really good. It's really good. Get a look at it. It's really good.
That book, really,
insane.
It changed my whole
outlook on life. Yeah.
I found the secret. That's a good book.
Right.
The secret. That's good. Yeah.
Very nice. Question number two. What lesson have you learnt in your life that you know is true, but you kind of hate? We have another stumped. We stumped James again.
Sometimes you can't do everything.
Sometimes you can't do everything. That is it. I don't think we've had that one before. That's really good.
Sometimes I can't do And I have the certainly things. So yeah, but
that's nice. I really like that. Number three, your friend who's having a tough time at the moment picks up the phone. He rings you and says he's having a really, really bad day today. What do you say?
Let's meet up.
Meet up?
Yeah. Come here, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Nice. Question number four. When you're struggling with something, struggling with yourself, what's your go-to? What do you do to improve things?
Go train.
Train.
Yeah, I have to get out there. Yeah, the active.
Okay, nice. A few people have said training. It's a release. It's release for everyone, isn't it?
Training is so important. That's lockdown and gyms being closed is an absolute disaster. Closing gyms now is such a bad idea. It must have.
Yeah, no, I agree. Question number five. You're lying on your deathbed looking back at your life. What are you most proud of?
Where I've been now.
In disability?
Yeah. Genius. Where I've been now in coaching disabled clients, changing their lives to better mental and physical. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
James.
And have I mentioned that I do, it gets me.
It's fantastic. James, we've gone for an hour and 15 minutes. And I cannot thank you enough for coming on. What a story. And I hope people listen to this and they're like, fuck, that is insane. Like, you just woke up one morning and you partially lost the ability to speak, and then the use of your parts of your hands. It is one of the most extraordinary stuff. I think the most beautiful part of it, James, though, is your mentality and your ability to jump over obstacles when they come in your way. And that's rare, but it's learned over time through positive mindset and mentality. So thank you. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much for asking me to be a part of it. It means so much because you look past. I know I have a speech issue, but it's not typical of that. I'm a teacher in doing this. Thank you.
No, it's to be honest, I don't really care if people can't quite listen to it or can't quite hear it properly, because do you know what? It doesn't really matter. We have done an hour and 15 minutes where I could understand like 99% of what you're saying, so I'm sure everybody else can, and they're going to take so much from this. And so, yeah, I'm really proud of this episode.
It means a lot. The questions you ask, thank you.
Good. Well, when this is all over, we will go for a coffee, and I want to come up to the Get Busy Living Centre anyway. I just want to see it. So we'll go for a coffee and we'll have more of a chat. And yeah, thank you, James Sutliff, for coming on The Rut. What a legend.
One of the most inspirational human beings I've ever sat down with.
one of the strongest men I've ever met, one of the most positive men I've, and nicest men as well, I've ever met and had the pleasure of sitting down with. James Sutcliffe, you really do run out of superlatives to describe you eventually. You are that good. Keep inspiring, keep pushing, keep trying to find answers for your condition, and keep being a beacon of hope for the entire disabled community, and really showing the world actually that you can do anything with a disability. An absolute pleasure to welcome you this week. A reminder that you can view James and I's episode on our YouTube channel, The Rut. If you're new to The Rut, then we would absolutely love to have your support by the way of subscribe. And do you know what? As it's Christmas, why don't you leave us a review too? Go on, I dare you. A final big shout out to our partners Cornerstone. So thank you so much for sponsoring and joining the podcast mission to improve and highlight men's mental health. It's a pleasure to have you on board. They are going to be delivering you all of your men's health needs this Christmas by the way of their monthly subscription box. And remember, you can get £10 off your first box by clicking on the link in the show notes below this episode, or go on to www.cornerstone.co.uk/rut. Have an absolutely wonderful Christmas from everybody here at The Rut. And from me, have a brilliant, brilliant Christmas. Be well rested. We will see you soon. Goodbye.